Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the La Poitevin Group conference call. If at any time during this call you need assistance, please press star zero for the operator. I would now like to turn the conference over to David La Poitevin. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Okay, everyone, welcome to the virus pandemic conference call. 10 days ago, the stock markets were hitting all-time highs, and I just ordered Dow 30,000 party hats, which I've now put on hold. So 10 days ago, we're down 10% in 10 days. I'm not a doctor. I have no insight into, you know, the contagion or any medical things. I'm a stock market guy and a finance guy. So what do? Is I pull out the history books and I try to look for similar type events and see what the market reactions have been. Ironically, this is the 16th correction since 2009. 17 times ago, the market got it right. So the market has been wrong 15 consecutive times. So every time we've had a correction since 2009, that the people that sold and the reason for market declines is selling, the people that sold were wrong because the markets then later hit brand new highs. Now, obviously, there's some people that sold and flipped in and out, but the majority of people miss it. 17 times ago was 2007. Our clients were pretty well protected, predominantly in bonds, and you know, this time we're predominantly in stocks. So we need to do our homework and figure out what the ramifications are. Obviously, the questions that I have from clients are all like, what the hell does this mean? And so we'll go through it. So I've been able to identify six virus / pandemics since 1900. And so I was quite interested to see what the return for the year of the Dow. Now, we only have the Dow because when you're going back to the Spanish influenza of 1918, there was no S&P 500 and there was no TSX. So we only have information on the Dow, so I'll just use the Dow 30, which is also a pretty good representation, as we know. Okay, so here's what we have from 1900. We have the Spanish influenza of 1918, which was pretty brutal, and some reports are killed 50 million. It killed at least 20 million people around the world. We have the Asian flu pandemic of 1957. We have the Hong Kong influenza of 1968. We have the swine flu of 1976. We have the avian flu of 1997, and we have SARS in recent memory of 2003. So it's quite interesting. I asked the group what their estimate, and I've been asking brokers around the offices what they think the stock markets would have done in those years. Some people have responded that, well, obviously all six were down years. My group was kind of like, well, I think it's 50-50. I almost fell off my chair when I did this homework. 1918, the Spanish influenza, the stock market was up 10.5%. 1957, it was minus 12.8, but that was followed by a plus 34 in 1958. 1968, plus 4.3. The swine flu of 76, plus 17.9. 1997, 22.6, was the avian flu, and the 2003 SARS, the Dow was up 25.3%. So what's interesting, so we had five out of six up when we have global pandemics or influenzas. 86% of the time, the stock market is higher to end the year. Now, you got to remember that this is bizarre because in the last 20 years, just for example, the Dow has closed lower seven of the last 20 years. So when you have global pandemics, the market's up 86% of the time, and in the last 20 years, the market was up 65% of the time. So stocks do better if you've got a global pandemic. Now, the thing in common about these was they tend to happen during virus season, which is the winter, and they tend to roll off in the summertime. So what can be going on here? Because obviously these are not good for the economy. Like, it can't be. The Spanish influenza couldn't have been good for the economy, or the SARS wasn't good for the economy. Let's remember as well, one of the epicenters of SARS was Canada and Toronto. So, like, there wasn't a conference in Toronto that was going to be held that didn't get canceled. 100% of conferences that were going to be held in 2003 in Canada were canceled, you know, by sort of global, you know, doctors' conferences or, work conferences. Yet the markets did really well. Clients of mine know that the most important thing in the stock market is the Federal Reserve Board. And let's remember the old adage that money has to find a home. You know, water poured down a mountain will settle out somewhere. And our job is to find out where. Now, there's so much uncertainty about this that the knee-jerk reaction is always sell, as I'm sure it was with SARS. In fact, SARS, the stock market corrected 12.8% before it bottomed out. And the stock market today, it's an interesting day. The market was down 900 points this morning. It's down half of that now, less than half. My research guy, Aaron Hoffman, is a half kind of full guy. So he goes, no, David, the market's up 500. Like it's, and it is from its low point of the day. We're down 10%. SARS was 12.8, and I can, as I mentioned, the 16th correction since 2009, the 15 prior corrections, the average decline is about 12.5%. So history would say we've got a few percent more of selling to go, but the most important thing for capital and when they're looking for a home is what's the alternative. And I'm really worried about the investing public, because the investing public, and I've mentioned this on the last few calls, once again are buying into the greatest bubble that we have seen in our lifetime. The 30-year Government of Canada bond today was broke below 1.3% and traded about 1.28% for 30 years. Now, I've not met anybody that thinks this is a wise investment to hold for the long run. People are buying it because they are conditioned like Pavlov's dog. They're conditioned that when stocks go down, bonds go up. Now, sometimes that's true, and I can tell you as a guy that's been around maybe too long, in the 80s and the 90s, bonds and stocks traded down as interest rates went up, and in fact, the bond bear markets led to the stock bear markets. And, you know, if we look at the bond market at about 1.28, compounding your interest for the next 30 years, you would be up just over 40%. Now, all the people on the call, I want a show of hands, who thinks inflation in the next 30 years, the cost of living will not be 40% higher? In fact, if we just use the inflation rate in Canada today, the cost of living, it will take $203 in 30 years to buy $100 worth of today's goods. And, you know, I went back 30 years ago, and the Internet tells me, and of course the Internet is always right, the Internet tells me that the price of a Big Mac in February of 1990 was $2.19. And by the way, the reason we use Big Mac is the Economist uses the Big Mac to look at pricing metrics from around the world. They call it the Big Mac Index. It's a homogeneous product. It really hasn't changed. If you look at the price of a Honda Civic, it's not really fair. It didn't have ABS brakes. It didn't have traction control. A Big Mac is a bloody Big Mac, and you're willing to work X amount of hours to buy that. It's junk food, and it serves a need when you're in a hurry. And it's the same argument today as it was back then. Big Mac was $2.19. Today it's $5.99. So roughly speaking, the Big Mac Index would show us that the cost of living in the last 30 years is up 273%. We're going to be at a minimum, cost of living has doubled. And so at 273, I'm going to argue that in the next 30 years, the outlook for inflation is worse than the last 30 years. I'm going to argue that the response from the central banks once again will be to print money and to lower interest rates, and that's going to lead to higher inflation, not lower inflation. And, of course, the knee-jerk is, you know, today or tomorrow, it doesn't create inflation. It creates some deflation because the price of commodities is going down. But at the end of the day, the price of a Big Mac in 30 years from now is probably going to be much higher than 273%. So if we look the Big Mac index versus bonds, you're going to lose more than half your net worth, and that's assuming that you're in a tax rate of zero. Most of my clients are in a tax rate that's far higher than zero. And so the bond bubble continues to amaze. But at the end of the day, capital has to find a home. And the reason, I guess, that the previous six pandemic viruses that were global fears and restricted travel and created slowdowns was that in every one of those circumstances, the Fed either cut rates or stopped raising rates and became accommodative, and it stimulated the economy. So, I mean, the differences this time is the global supply chains are much more interlinked than they have been, maybe not so much than 03, but certainly than 1918. And so you're going to have a slowdown 100% for sure. Does GDP go negative? Maybe. We've had Microsoft, we had MasterCard, we've had, you know, bookings.com all come out and say, we don't know what our earnings will be. We have no guidance. We don't know. The thing is, though, that the market, if you're Microsoft, the market will give you a free pass if you say, here's the quarter. We had a bad quarter because of this, but our outlook, it'll all depend on the outlook. It'll also depend on the time thing. I'm not a doctor, but in the past six, these viruses and pandemics have gotten under control come summertime because viruses, like the flu, is a, you know, is kind of a wintertime thing, and you know, you can get the flu in the summer, but it doesn't spread nearly as rapidly. This is a bizarre one because it spreads very rapidly. But outside of China, the death rate seems to be in the 1 to 2% range, and it seems to be affecting, you know, really super seniors, and it's, or, you know, bad diabetes and smoking and that kind of stuff, where it's not really killing healthy people. SARS was killing 10%, although it didn't spread nearly as fast. I would rather have, and touch wood, I don't want either of them, I would way rather have Corona than SARS. For sure, it's like, you know, travel's off and everything, but let's just look at history. That's all I can do. And if anything, you really got to think long and hard about selling your AT&T yielding a 5%+ dividend and your Bristol-Myers and your Johnson & Johnsons of the world. I was talking to a client today, $3 million portfolio, $97,000 a year dividends. What are we going to do? Sell it and put it into a bond yielding 1.3%, which would cut that $3 million to, you know, $40,000 a year? In the long run, businesses are exceptionally reasonably priced. And let's remember that the stock market, like I said, in the last 20 years, the market's been down. We call it, the market's had a great run. Yes, it had a great run last year, the year before. It had a lousy year. 35% of the time in the last 20 years, the markets have been down, and yet stocks that we're buying are priced at below average price earnings ratios, strong dividends, and when the dust settles, and when there's a, you know, the markets are funny because when there's a hint, a whiff of this thing is rolling down and businesses are opening up, like China seems to be, like, even though we've got like a U.S. case and problems in Italy and Japan and Korea, China seems to be kind of rolling down, like the worst is over, and Apple's opened half of its stores that were all closed. As soon as the market gets a globally this thing, and maybe it's a month, maybe it's 2 months, but as soon as you get that whiff, the markets will rip higher, which is, even though statistically we probably have a few percent more on the downside, we can't make that call. And, you know, one of these days the market's going to open, maybe it's today, down hard, and then it's going to close up, and then you've probably hit the bottom. But, again, there's no alternative, and historically it's shocking that 86% of the time when you look, and it's, by the way, it's very appropriate to look at the calendar year because influenzas are always at their worst in February or March, and they feel the worst. But then they tend to not be as big a problem. So if we look past to December, you know, long term to December of 2020, we've got a very high, we've got a higher probability of being higher this year than we do randomly for the last 20 years. So hopefully that has, you know, just shed some light on where my head is. I'm not going to open for questions because, you know, the facts are the facts, and plus, you know, I've talked long enough. So feel free to give us a call. Call Mark, Darcy, Aaron. Darcy's away this week. Aaron, Susanna, Fletcher, and we're all here to help, you know, you're on your own individual portfolios. Emails work too. I catch most of them, but some of them I miss. So that's it. Thank you, operator, and thanks for your time.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the Lapointe & Group conference call. We thank you for your participation and have a nice day.